Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Friday, June 16th, 2017. And with me today, I have Jeff Butts. How are you, Jeff?
What's up?
Sup, dude.
I'm doing great, man. How are you?
I'm doing awesome. And and John Martellaro, daddy-o, how are you?
Good morning. Doing well. And you?
I am doing great. I'm glad both of you were here. I'm also glad that iMazing is our sponsor today. And and Jeff, I do like the little tagline that you invented.
Oh, yeah. iMazing is amazing.
There you go.
iMazing is amazing.
Awesome. Anyhow, hey, we have stuff to talk about, so we're just going to jump right in. And the first thing is the news that Apple announced earlier this morning, which is that they have hired Jamie Ehrlich and Zach Van Omberg. Both are presidents of Sony Pictures Television.
Not anymore,
because now they're heading up Apple's original programming, just everything for Apple Music. So these guys, you may not know their names, but you know what they've done, because they're the guys that are behind The Shield, Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul, Bloodline. So anyhow, a lot of the newsroom, Boardwalk Empire, forgot about those. Anyhow,
this is huge.
Yeah, this is huge. Yeah, these guys are considered to be part of the team that ushered in the golden age of television. So
yep.
You know, they've been behind cranking out hits like this since 2005. And I find it very interesting that they both came over to Apple. And also, remember last month, I believe it was, that's when we heard that Apple had been talking with Michael Lombardo, who was the guy that was in charge of HBO programming. And so, like, every big show that you know from HBO, that's the guy that did that. So, like, Game of Thrones, yep. Westworld, all that stuff. So they didn't go with Michael Lombardo, but they did go with Jamie Ehrlich and Zach Van Omberg. And Jeff, you said this is big. Why do you say that?
Oh, these are heavy hitters, and Apple's trying to break into its own original video content. Mm-hmm. And as much as I love Planet of the Apps, I'm not the best case scenario for Apple. And apparently the best case scenario for Apple hasn't been crazy about Planet of the Apps.
Yeah, it's all right. So for me, Planet of the Apps, and I know we're kind of rabbit holing here for a moment, that genre of show isn't one that I'm really into anyhow. But
right.
I watched the first episode with an open mind, because even though I may not be that interested in a specific genre, I can watch a show or a movie for what it is, and I can look at it based on what is the content they're offering, how are they presenting it, how are they framing scenes, all of that stuff. And when I watched Planet of the Apps, that first episode, it felt just awkward, and I just couldn't get into any of the people. And right. I know Gary Vaynerchuk, his thing is, hey, I'm in your face and I'm controversial all the time. But to me, he felt like he was stilted and like he was putting on, playing the character of Gary Vaynerchuk.
Instead of being himself.
Yeah.
Mm. It might have been too scripted.
Yeah, it felt too scripted, and it felt poorly edited, and it just didn't flow for me, and I couldn't get into it at all. And yes, I know that's not the genre that I'm into, but you know, I've watched, for comparison, like a couple episodes what's it called, Shark Tank?
Shark Tank, yeah.
And while the show itself didn't interest me, the way, the pacing they had, the way they were editing pieces together, you know, it had a flow and it had an energy. And I just didn't feel like that was there with Planet of the Apes.
Okay.
All right. So I'm going to pull us back up out of the rabbit hole and make it sound like that was actually really relevant to everything we're talking about.
Well, it is relevant.
Yes, it is totally relevant. So I feel like Planet of the Apes is a perfect example of Apple on their own trying to come up with what they feel will be compelling programming without right. having the help and the expertise of people that do this and do it really well. I think that now that they have this dual team from Sony Pictures on mm-hmm. board, that's going to change completely. And we're going to see a much more focused attack on original content. We're going to see programming that's really compelling, and
right.
and I think that Apple Music, give it a couple years, and it's going to be a real competitor for eyeballs with Netflix original programming and Amazon Prime original programming.
Absolutely,
I think so too. You know what interests me about this? I'm curious about, and we may never find out, about how Apple enticed these two gentlemen to come over. Normally, when you have a high-profile executive and they've been doing something very well and they're very famous for it, either they get tired of what they're doing or they run across constraints that they don't like. And perhaps Apple figured out a way to lure these guys over. You know, Apple doesn't have, as we just discussed, a strong track record here.
Right.
So what is it about Apple's offer, about Apple's vision, that entice these guys to move away from their award-winning ways, so to speak? Was it more money, a lot more money than they were making? Or was it creative latitude or control? I'm curious about what Apple did, given their position in the industry, to lure two notables away from Sony.
I have a feeling it's a combination of things. And you hit on the key components, that they're going to have a lot of control over the content. They're going to have a lot of creative latitude. And my guess is the way the meeting went was that they all sat down, these guys in Apple, and they're all talking, and Apple said, look, what we want to do is give you the opportunity to shine and just make this your own. So it's not these guys doing stuff that's improving Sony Pictures, but it's these guys creating something themselves, and
right.
it's truly them. And the whole time, while they're looking at both these guys saying this, there's a guy with a pen, and he just keeps adding zeros to the check.
And you've got to paint a picture of the future, too, because these executives, when they're in a job interview like this, they've got to see a path forward, and they've got to see a corporate vision that entices them into doing something that perhaps they didn't think they could do at Sony.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. I think the challenge factor could be a huge part of it, because they're taking a venture. Basically, to distill it down, Apple was trying to do Hollywood without hiring Hollywood. And now they've hired some Hollywood execs, and it should get better.
It should.
Yeah, my guess is that prior to this announcement, Netflix and Netflix and Amazon and Hulu were looking at what Apple was doing and thinking, all right, we just need to keep an eye on them, but this is fine. Today's announcement comes out, and my guess is that the meetings have already happened. We're like, okay, we need to be very focused and stay on our top game, because now Apple is a contender. Now,
yep.
Granted, if you look at the offerings Apple has given us so far, we've had some interesting documentaries. We have a show that's getting mediocre reviews, and then we have another show that's coming out soon. In the form of Carpool Karaoke, and the Dr. Dre show, which I just totally can't remember the name of now, that's still not out. But anyhow, right. So Apple doesn't have much of a track record with this, like John said, but I think that what they did today was signal that they are going to be a serious contender, which I think is awesome. Bring on more of the golden age of television.
Yep. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Hey, our sponsor today, I believe I have mentioned, is iMazing, and I'm so glad that they're sponsoring us because it's a product that I use. It's a product that I was using even before they became a sponsor, and it's a product that has helped me out on so many occasions. So what iMazing does is it runs on your Mac or your Windows PC, and it lets you get your fingers under the hood and get all the data on your iPhone, iPad, or iPod Touch. So, like, let's say you have a voicemail that came from someone that's very special to you, and you don't want to lose that because, you know, maybe this person just isn't around anymore. You know, they've moved on to something else in their life. They've passed away, whatever it is, but this is a very special thing for you. Well, you can use iMazing and go and get that voicemail off your phone and save it as an audio file on your Mac so that you can listen to it anytime you want. Mm-hmm. And you can do the same thing with text conversations, which can be really handy if you have some things that happen, like happened for me, where I'll start in a text conversation with, say, Dave or Brian, and it quickly evolves into what becomes a text-based business meeting where we have these really great ideas. Well, I can then use iMazing and go and grab that text conversation, pull it out or copy it from Messages, put it onto my Mac, and now I have all the notes from the conversation right there in front of me. It's a great thing. I also love that this is a killer tool for backing up my devices. So So if you have... Here's the thing I've said all week, and I'm going to say it again today. If you are already running the beta of iOS 11, or if you're planning on running it when the public beta comes out, you need iMazing, because this is a tool that's going to let you back up your device in a way that you can feel totally confident that if something goes wrong with the beta, you can roll back to a state on the device where you're not borked. And that's a big peace of mind right there for me. So
well, and even if you're not on the beta, if you're a Windows user and you're on 10.3, iMazing, I believe, is still the only way you can access any international named files that you might have.
Oh, that's a really good point. See? Stunningly useful. So you guys can go get this yourself, like, right now. And when I say right now, I mean wait till the end of the show, because you know we're having this fun chat about stuff. So wait till the end of the show. Then go to imazing.com/TDO. imazing.com/TDO. You can download iMazing and test it out. Make sure it's going to work for you. When you're ready to buy it, go back to that link, imazing.com/TDO, and you're going to get 20% off the purchase price. And that 20% discount is good for individual licenses and for the family licenses. So if you're getting the group package, no big deal, 20% off, which actually is a big deal because you're saving a lot of money. So go check it out, imazing.com/TDO. Thank you, iMazing, for being our sponsor today. All right, the other thing I wanted to talk about today, this is something that, John, I believe you're really champing at the bit to discuss.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm encapsulating this wrong, go ahead and correct me. But you're really interested in how the iPad is fitting into Apple's strategy for the education market, and how this is competing with the other products that are in that space as well. How'd I do?
Right. I would say you got it nailed on the head. I've been thinking about this for a while, and my wife's involved in education, always has been. So it's a subject of deep interest to me. You know, we talk a lot about the iPad in commercial use. We talk about how it was kind of slow to evolve. We talk about how Apple's had to, you know, really make some wonderful radical changes in iOS 11, like files and drag and drop, to, you know, bring it into respectability as our future computing device. And the sequential decline in sales. So you can't really divorce these effects and problems from education either. Mm-hmm. They kind of indirectly appear in Apple's education market. And my article that I published yesterday was really a lot of questions and ponderings rather than statements. But I'm interested in how the iPad has evolved as an educational tool. And I think it's evolved just as slowly as it has for all the rest of us. And in one respect, no one would have predicted the seriously small number of great programming environments. And learning how to program in even K through 12 is very important for young children. Mm-hmm. And Apple has addressed this problem in part with Swift Playground, but that's not the complete solution because it's very focused on accomplishment and kind of low on actual coding as problem solving and algorithm writing. So there is that issue because not every school curriculum wants to teach Swift. They may have other ideas about how they want to structure their programming classes. So it's a good solution, but it's not an all-encompassing solution. And, you know, we thought when the iPad first came out and the iPhone that more so for the iPad that a virtual keyboard was the future. And we saw ourselves using the sci-fi like device with no attached keyboard. But in time, you know, Microsoft kind of reversed that. The Chromebooks kind of reversed that. Apple has relented and is refocused on keyboards. All because as time has gone on, we've discovered that for some uses, you know, a real physical keyboard is just indispensable. And thirdly, I have the issue of using iPads in elementary and middle school. But when you want to grow up and you want to, you know, think about advanced high school and college classes, you're thinking about not an iPad because of its limitations, but you're thinking about a Windows or a Mac OS notebook computer because of its OS capabilities and Microsoft Office and all the tools you need and the programming environment and the professional, the professional quality development products that you've got for a full-fledged OS. So you're going to try to make that migration to a notebook computer. And in some sense, Apple's competition has kind of preempted that argument by stepping in with low-cost PC and Chrome OS notebooks that solve several of those problems, create a more universal programming environment, a more grown-up environment, and actually less cost, because you can buy these Chromebooks for $149. And even with educational discounts, I doubt the standard iPad that was announced in March for $329 can be sold, and even volume discounts in education for much less than about $275.
Right. Probably.
So schools are making cost-conscious decisions to roll out a product that doesn't always fulfill all their pedagogical needs. And the article that I pointed to yesterday at Apple World Today says that a research group found that tablet use is slowing because of the growing popularity of Chromebooks. So Google's onto something, and the article kind of philosophizes about what Apple can do. You know, we'll never see a MacBook Air 2 for $199. I don't think we'll ever see that. But, you know, the best Apple can do is that, as I've mentioned in one of my articles, is that at the local community college in the bookstore, you can buy a MacBook Air with a Microsoft Office subscription for $599. Well, when my wife looks at her college students, she doesn't see even $599 computers. Admittedly, it's a community college and not a four-year school like CU. But what she's looking at in class is not iPads. She's looking at PC notebooks used, a smattering of MacBooks because they're so expensive, MacBook Pros, mm-hmm. MacBook Airs, and a lot of PC notebooks and Chromebooks that have been bought for, you know, $150, $199. So these are the things that are kind of on my mind, and I raise them without really definitive answers.
All right, so I'm going to try and coax an answer out of you before we have to wrap up. you talk about iOS versus macOS, and you use the term grown-up operating system. So my take is you're looking at iOS as more of a less mature operating system, something that doesn't have the flexibility and power of an operating system that we're used to on a desktop or laptop computer. So with that in mind, do you think that iOS 11 does anything to address that? Meaning,
yes.
Yeah, so the iPad can become more of a laptop replacement at higher education levels. And granted, I know that we're still not at a point where this is a full-on true programmer's tool because we don't have the compilers and everything that right. we need. But aside from that, yeah, I mean, it does look to me like iOS 11 is a big leap forward towards yes. making the iPad a viable alternative to a laptop in many cases.
It is a great start, and I'm happy to see Apple doing it, and I think iOS 11 is going to be a stellar release. The question is it enough to hold off the competition? Is it enough to turn the tables on Chromebooks? We'll have to see. I mean, Apple's going to have to keep making strides like this and figure out a way to address the needs of schools across the board as opposed to, you know, spot solutions with things like Swift Playground, and it's still rather expensive. Remember when the iPad first came out?
Oh yes.
We at TMO, we spent a lot of time, I know I did, talking about the sweet spot, because we saw the iPad mini as a solution for students being lower cost. We were paying $600-$700, maybe $900 for a fully loaded iPad 3, 4 Air, whatever. And when the iPad mini came out, I think it was 2012, I think, we thought, oh, wow, this is perfect for the grade schooler. It's got the right size. It fits in your lunch bag or your backpack. It should sell for about $219, hopefully $229, $239.
Because, under $250 for sure.
Sure, sure. And I think it came out at much more. I think it was, something, $349 when it first came out.
It started at $349, yeah.
And everybody sighed and said, well, Apple's back on track to do the very, very, very best that they can make, and they haven't made any concessions to the price consciousness of elementary school students. And they haven't really recovered from that mentality yet. So these are the things that are on my mind. Don't have answers.
Well, what I'm hoping is that the iPad does stay as a successful device because, man, I really like having iPads. And with iOS 11 and my iPad Pro, I'm feeling like, aside from podcasting, I'm almost at the point where I can do everything I need away from my desk on an iPad Pro. And that's actually really exciting for me. So, anyhow. Yeah. I like to think Apple's on the right track with this, and that they'll be able to make more inroads in the education market and in the business markets with the iPad, especially with iOS 11.
Anyhow, I hope so.
We're out of time, so we have to wrap up. John, thank you for being here today.
Oh, you're very welcome. Pleasure.
And Jeff, thank you for being here as well.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to have both of you on the show. I'm glad I'm getting to wrap up the week with the two of you. I'm also glad that iMazing has been our sponsor all week long. Head over to their website, imazing.com/TDO. Get 20% off your copy of iMazing. It's a great tool, and there's so many things that'll do for you and so much more than I've even talked about all week long. So go check it out. Get your 20% discount, imazing.com/TDO. Listeners, thank you for being here. I'm so glad you joined me all week long. We'll see everyone again on Monday.